Hey everybody, welcome to episode 2 of Boy Meets Tech. Today we are lucky to be joined with Jill Soley. She talks about her current position as the VP of Product for Cloverpop. She also talks about her time as a startup consultant and an advisor and what she really sees as the main mistake that startups make at those early stages. She also talks about what makes a really viable MVP. We also go over her new book, Beyond Product, and the over 50 interviews she had to do to put together that book and what were the main lessons that she took out of that experience. So without further ado, here is episode 2. Thank you so much. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Boy Meets Tech. I'm super excited for this new episode and very excited to have today Jill Soley. She is the VP of Product Management and Product Marketing at Cloverpop. She's also a startup advisor and the author of the new book, Beyond Product. So, Jill, without further ado, we're very happy to have you here today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Cameron. I'm super excited.
Yeah, so I think we'll just dive right in. And obviously, we want to learn a little bit more about your backgrounds, how you got into the tech industry. And I think you have kind of an interesting story that involves starting out in museums and in TV documentaries and also some family ties to the tech industry that might have kind of gotten your, whetted your beak and kind of got you really excited about this industry.
Okay, well, that's a whole bunch of stuff. So maybe I'll start with where I am now and then kind of a little bit about how I got there. So, sort of as you mentioned, I've been doing cloud and mobile software product management and marketing for the past 16 years at a variety of startups and brand name companies like Adobe and Freshworks and Siebel Systems. Currently, I am VP of product and product marketing at Cloverpop, which is a Series A startup in Silicon Valley, San Francisco, that provides enterprise software solutions for decision-making. And what that means is we help organizations make better decisions. We help them communicate out their decisions and track and learn from their decisions to make better decisions from there. I also just wrote a book, Beyond Product, which I'm super excited about. It just came out last week. And it's basically the startup marketing book for non-marketers, and we can talk a little bit more about that as we go on. How did I get here, right? That's what you want to know? So, I guess way back, my mother was a tech founder of a startup when I was about 10 years old. So think 1980-ish,
okay.
Right? Madonna was popular probably around that time, right? Disco
that Greece, sounds right.
Sort of that, right? She wrote the software to put listings for real estate companies online. So now, right, we go and search to find an apartment, a house, whatever. Way back when it was index cards, it was all handwritten.
Okay.
And she wrote that software.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, I think in some ways I was sort of destined to end up in technology and startups. And the thing that I remember my father always saying to me was, your career, whatever you're going to do, it probably doesn't exist yet. And that really stuck with me as I went to college and studied and so forth and sort of thought about the world and my career. I went to MIT, and when I graduated, all of my classmates went into engineering, and I zagged. And I, as you mentioned, I worked on documentaries for public broadcast and created interactive exhibits for science museums and so forth. And that was really sort of the early days of the World Wide Web, the sort of Wild West of the web. So I kind of, it kind of led me on a path to create websites for public broadcast and so forth. And as streaming media form, that was really my path into IT consulting, of all things, creating collaboration communication solutions for large companies, which was sort of a good path into software product management, and kind of the rest is history, as it were.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to kind of what your father says, because I feel like that's pretty powerful to kind of have the idea that your job isn't out there, right? And I think a lot of people are set in their ways of kind of, especially, you know, the whole genesis of this podcast is people going into the tech industry who don't have kind of that tech background. And I think the biggest thing I've gotten from interviews that I've listened to and podcasts and books is kind of people just make an idea. They say, yeah, that's not out there, and let's go pursue that. So, I mean, kind of how has that kind of shaped your kind of experience and kind of why you love the tech industry? I mean, the idea of just kind of visualizing something and then being able to pursue that on your own.
Well, I mean, I think that's exactly it, right? It's, I love the change. I love the constant learning. It's never boring, right? The tech industry is never boring. It's ever changing. If I think about when I started doing software product management, it was on client server software, right? It was these big projects, these big, you know, products that took hundreds of people and 2 years to release. So we would plan it, define it, and you had to get on the train. And if you didn't make the train, it didn't happen. And by the time we released it, shocker of shockers, it wasn't what the customers needed because the world had changed. It was 2 years later.
Right.
So just the idea that, you know, now at CloverPop, we do continuous development and every day we're releasing new features for our customers. And you know what? If something is wrong, if we get something wrong, we can change it tomorrow. And that's cool. And the value that we can provide for people, for our customers, is truly immense.
So then I have, so a term that I've learned very quickly is kind of product feedback loop and that being a really important thing. And just going back to what you just said, what does the feedback loop look like at a CloverPop and really how crucial is kind of getting consumer feedback right away and then kind of iterating on that very quickly?
So it's constant and it's, you know, it's depending on what your market is and who your customers are and what stage you're at. It can be much harder or much easier, right? If you have tons of customers and you have a close relationship with those customers or you have lots of consumers, you can get a lot of feedback in different forms easily. When you're first starting out, it could be pretty hard to do that. And so you sometimes have to be creative in how you do that because you can't harass your couple of customers necessarily.
Right.
If you build a good relationship with them, you can, make them a part of, you know, and feel and get the value of giving you that feedback because it just, it makes the product better for them.
Right.
And so we are constantly in various forms. From the early days of CloverPop, it was lots of surveys online because it's important to get not just the feedback of your existing customers, but the market. And so we keep doing that as well. And so it's surveys and testing with the market and so forth to get that broader market feedback, as well as various different sort of marketing kinds of tests, right? Test messaging via, you know, Twitter ads and so on and so forth. And then with existing customers, it's just getting out product features every day and asking customers for feedback and taking in that feedback and trying to interpret it and trying new things and getting new things out and testing it and constantly, you know, it's a constant cycle.
And could you kind of touch on kind of what the day-to-day at CloverPop looks like as the VP of product management? I know we were speaking a little bit before the phone call, but you know, when I was, you know, with my co-founder, he's very much the technical side of it. And he asked me, you know, very straight up and very candidly, you know, do you guys not have product managers in the food and beverage industry? And I was like, no, we don't. We have operations managers, we have logistics managers, we have sales managers, and everyone kind of handles their own specific things. But in terms of a product manager, I would say almost in other industries, that falls under the CEO. And the product management in this industry seems to be very specific. So I'd kind of love to know what the day-to-day of kind of looks like for you as the VP of product, what falls under that umbrella and kind of what do you do each day to kind of get better in that position?
Okay. That's a great question. It's changing day to day. It's lots of different things, depending on sort of where we are in a given cycle. But I'd say sort of at, overall it's around sort of, setting and communicating the product strategy, right? Figuring out where we need to go with the product and the steps to get us there and working closely with design, our CEO, our engineering team, our customer success, our marketing, et cetera, to make sure that we're all aligned towards getting there. And so what does that mean sort of specifically, right? It's spending time with our designer and engineering to define the near term roadmap. What are the things that we have to do in the near term? What are, you know, what are our top priorities? And then, you know, writing specs, reviewing specs, et cetera, to get them out, working out various challenges in both the design and in the tech. It's sitting in on customer meetings, right? Meeting with customers, training them on the product, listening to their feedback, and trying to take what they say and turn that into useful feedback for the product, right? Often a customer will say, I need this widget. Well, they don't necessarily need that button or that widget.
Right.
What that question is, you know, what when they ask for that, it means there's some underlying need, and sometimes you have to kind of tease that out.
Okay.
And interpret it and translate it into something that really is kind of the right solution for them and a broader set of customers.
Okay, great. I mean, yeah, it's kind of like the customer doesn't know what they want, but at the same time, you kind of always have to be listening to the customer and figuring out what that next step is. And I think that's what we're learning very quickly too. But I'd love to pivot a little bit off of Cloverpop now, and I know that you are a startup advisor as well. How many startups right now do you currently advise for or kind of consult with? And what is the parameters for if, you know, us just starting a startup and obviously always looking for help? I mean, do you ever say no to anybody? What's kind of the parameters of, that you put in place to be like, okay, this is a startup that I believe in and that I would like to consult with and move forward with?
So, the majority of what I'm doing right now is Cloverpop and the book. That's the bulk of what I'm doing, just because that's, you know, that plus being mom to my two boys is more than a 24-hour day. But there are a couple companies that I started advising before I took the job at Cloverpop and before I started on the book. And so I'm continuing to, in somewhat limited capacities, help them out wherever they need. So like there's a company called Owl Factor, which is working on kind of the fake news and news bubble problem.
Okay.
And I'm just, it's something I'm passionate about. It's a real problem and it's a friend of mine. So I'm kind of helping out where I can. And then my young cousin just started a new tea subscription service. So I can't help but do that and help out. And there are a couple of others that, again, in sort of limited capacity. But for the most part, right now, I've kind of limited that to focus on the other stuff.
Well, you've obviously had a lot of exposures to startups. And I'd love to know kind of what's kind of the biggest mistake that you see that they make kind of in the early stages? Or what's kind of the thing that you see is the most repeated and probably the most easily fixable?
You know, there are a lot of... certainly there are a lot of common mistakes that startups make, but I think the kind of biggest, the biggest issues for startups and the most common ones all are around kind of the same issue of focusing too much on the product or the solution and not enough on the market.
Okay.
And that can hit, and take multiple forms at different phases of the startup's life. All of which can start the business, can stall the business. So, for example, you know, before you even start building your product, you should be doing market research. You should be talking to many, many people in the market, right? Often these ideas are generated based on, you know, you had experience in the food and beverage industry. And so you know something about that market and you should be validating that. Right. And so it's whether it's surveys, whether it's, you know, for, you know, written surveys or speaking to people or probably a combination of the two, the more data points that you have, the more understanding, deep understanding of the market and the problem of your target customer that you can really connect to what the right product solution is, the more likely you're going to be successful. And certainly I've seen this and all of the investors that I spoke to. That I interviewed for Beyond Product consistently said the same thing. Then, you know, as you're defining your MVP and as you're getting a product to market, again, the more that you are testing and validating that with customers to make sure that you're not only building the right product overall, but you're prioritizing the right features and the things that are going to make a difference. And it's going to be an iterative process.
Right.
And then kind of the third major place, and, you know, it's sort of certainly... it's relevant everywhere, but the third major place is around messaging and positioning. Even when founders are sort of heeding these lessons, you know, listening to Steve Blank, who said, you know, famously, you know, that people should get out of the office, right? They don't necessarily think about it with a marketing lens. and in terms of how to position the product, what is the right messaging, what are the words people are using, what are those pain points that we can message around, so that then when they are advertising on their website or whatever, you see a lot of this talk about features. The first thing on a 9 out of 10 B2B tech websites talk about features on their homepage,
right,
instead of what that pain point is and what that value prop is that you provide.
Yeah, I mean, I'm learning that really quickly. I mean, we did a pitch event like a little while ago, and I didn't lead with kind of an example of what we were fixing, and I just kind of went right into, you know, this is what we do and not necessarily why we do it or what we're fixing. And I did see that once I provided an example and really said, okay, well, this is the reason why we're doing this, and this is how it can be applied to real life, that it made a lot more sense to everyone kind of in the community and who was listening. So I definitely think that's great advice and something that some people should kind of heed before kind of launching. Now to kind of go to your main kind of baby right now, which is the book, as you're holding up right now.
My baby.
I know you interviewed over 50 plus people for this book. I'd love to just kind of know the process, because you're super busy, obviously, a mom, you have a full-time job, you do some startup consulting on the side. I mean, really kind of what drove you to also take on writing a book, and what was really kind of like the thing that was just the itch that you had to scratch in terms of like, I have to dive deeper into this, and it's going to be more than a blog post, it's going to be more than an article. I really have to go in and really fully dive into this in the form of a book.
Insanity.
Yeah.
In a word, that's what drove me insanity. When I started working on it, I was full-time consulting to startups and seeing a lot of the same, those common mistakes that we talked about around focusing on the product and not focusing on the market and not leveraging marketing or working well with marketing and understanding the value that it can provide. And it was enough of a problem that I just got to this point where I felt like there's something there and I can consult and help one-off, but how do I get this message out more broadly? Because it really needs to be heard. And that's when kind of it snowballed and became a book. And, I felt like I had seen it and I had these things to say, but there's so much wisdom here in Silicon Valley that it sort of felt like the right approach to bring in all these other voices and learn from them. And so what was fun through the process is I started working at Clover Pop right around the same time that I really sort of seriously started on the book. And I've been both able to take some of my day-to-day things that I'm doing at Clover Pop and bring that into the book, and take some of these learnings and things that I hear from the people that I interview and bring that back to my day job and to, you know, startups that I help and so forth. So it's actually been a really fun iterative process. Now, trying to balance that with going to my kids, you know, coaching my kids' soccer games and all that other stuff has been a little bit challenging this year. So it's really been the only way that I've managed to do it is because I have a super supportive husband and kids who have just cheered me on and been amazing, and also knew that there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I have to imagine it has to be just like a help, because you can kind of always draw back to that well of all the interviews that you did, and kind of it should help you a lot, which is real-time problems at Clover Pop or any future problem, because you've spoken to everybody, you've gotten so many different viewpoints on everything. And that was kind of the reason why I wanted to start this podcast, right? It's like, yeah, I can go Google, affiliate links, or I can go Google what a product manager does, or I can go Google all these different things that I had no clue about before, but why not learn from like the master of that kind of domain and really learn from them, and then see if I can actually make myself a better CEO and a better co-founder from just learning from that firsthand experience. So I have to imagine that it definitely helped your current position, at Clover Pop, and just kind of made you more well-rounded. But one thing I did, you know, one of the interviews that, you know, kind of stood out to me was with Cheryl Kelland, and kind of talking about an MVP. And obviously, you know, an MVP is a minimum viable product, and it was, you know, made popular really with the Lean Startup. And it was something that me and my co-founder kept talking about and talking about, but then we got to the point of our MVP and we're like, well, this is pretty well developed, right? And maybe we could have launched something 2 months prior and waited a little bit and not spent so much money or so much time on certain features. So I kind of like to get your opinion on what defines a really good MVP, and when should you just release it out into the wilderness versus kind of continuing to hone in on it and tinker with it, and because I think there is a good balance to strike between the two.
So, you know, I don't know who first said this, but I've heard it said before, and it's so true. If you're proud of your MVP that you release, then you've waited way too long to release it.
Okay.
It's something I always keep in the back of my mind, because it's so true, because an MVP really is about getting feedback. You know, one of the VCs, Ibrahim, when I interviewed her, one of the things that struck me was her comment about not liking the idea of stealth startups, because the most important thing you have to do is get market feedback. And the earlier market feedback you get, the more likely you are to be successful, right? So that's really what your MVP is about. It's about understanding enough about the customer pain that you get out some, you know, small, complete, like, solution, right? But it's not buggy, right? It's not an excuse for delivering something that's buggy, but it's just one piece, one workflow, one thing that will help customers enough that you can get some feedback and then build out the other pieces, right? Give them just, you know, enough of a view towards enough value and enough of a view towards where you might be going that you can get some feedback.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, sorry.
I was just going to say, like, in Cheryl's example, right? It was, they launched it. It was a cell phone number and her at the other end answering questions.
Yeah.
And that got them a ton of customer data and information and so forth that helped them build out their solution. So it's about being creative.
Yeah, and I will say to the listeners, we'll link I'll put a link in the show notes to that blog post so they can specifically kind of reference that and see that whole MVP that Cheryl built out. I kind of draw back on the Reid Hoffman kind of saying of like, move fast and break things. And I think that's a good concept to have, but I think at the same time, you do have to kind of make sure that it's calculated, make sure that you're constantly getting feedback. And I think that's the best thing about this, you know, industry, is that you can kind of test an idea that was made, you know, in thin air and see if it works and see if you have people actually for it. Where, you know, where I was coming from, you had to invest in overhead, you had to invest in inventory, you had to invest in all this different time. And so for us, you know, it's like, even if we crash and burn, that was 6 months of my life. You know, it's okay. I think the worst part of it is if you didn't jump off and really take that risk. But outside of Cheryl's story, I mean, is there one story and one interview that really kind of stood out during the whole process?
I don't know if there was one. I think what was most interesting, and I think you'll find this with your podcast, is the trends that we saw through doing them all, right? Okay. The multiple founders, the multiple VCs, the multiple marketers began to sort of create this sort of tapestry or quilt or whatever, right? Where there were a lot of themes that emerged. And all of them have personalities and all of them have great stories. So, you know, you pick your topic, right? Judy Lohr gave great info about just how to position your company and how do you approach positioning. Cheryl talked about the MVP. Bill Macitis, when you're later on in your, you know, later stage, right? He talked about how to scale your startup. Kate Bradley Chernus, who's a founder of Lately, which is marketing software, she talked a lot about just, you know, early stage and how do you pitch and how do you think about that stuff, right? So there were all these great voices that helped sort of form a more complete book.
Great. Well, I think, and we'll definitely put a link in the show notes for the book, and we wish you all the success with that. I think we always like to, what we're trying to get into is always ending on this one question of kind of what interests you the most about the future of tech. And all I would say is please just don't say scooters, because I think every podcast that I listen to talks about scooters so much. So if we can avoid saying scooters, that's anything outside of scooters is an acceptable answer on this podcast, because I think that's another reason for starting this podcast, is just like we don't know how much more scooter information we can take, and they haven't taken over New York yet, but I know out there in Silicon Valley they're definitely taking over.
I must be, I don't know, you know, just in a totally different path than everybody else. I will not say scooters. I probably have a different answer than most on kind of what excites me about the future of technology, because to me, technology is an enabler. And I mean, there's super cool stuff happening with AI and machine learning and so on and so forth, right, with scooters. But you know, it's all a means to an end. And I think what's the most interesting thing that's happening with tech and with the industry right now is more around the capacity of people in this industry to change and grow and learn. And we're seeing this, the beginnings of this understanding and recognition of the value of diversity in driving business results and in driving innovation. And so what I'm excited to see is that increased inclusion and diversity and bringing in of all of those broader perspectives and ideas into the discussion, into the research, into the analysis, into, you know, all the boardrooms and the leadership and so on and so forth. And I want to see the new creative ideas that drives for industry. I think that's going to be super exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, there's a great podcast actually called like, Why Aren't There Any More Big Ideas? And it was on Freakonomics. And it basically talks about outside of the Industrial Revolution and the internet, there hasn't really been that big of ideas. And that's because mostly like the top, you know, those 1% is continuing to have the same ideas. And there's not a lot of inclusion or new ideas from the rest of the 99% to really infuse their ideas into kind of the atmosphere. And so I think as we start to be more inclusive, and especially as we, you know, as I build out my company on the side, I think that's a strength. You know, that's definitely something that can help you kind of have an edge on your competitors. And so I definitely agree with that wholeheartedly. But outside, you know, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. We will have this episode up very soon. Jill, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And to our listeners, thank you so much. And we look forward to having you next time on the Boy Meets Tech podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cameron.
Thank you.